The views and opinions expressed by the guests, callers, and hosts on this and all Rents Radio Network programs do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the network, its commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. In these controversial times, we believe the First Amendment and freedom of the press are absolutely essential to the survival of our nation. Thank you. And now, enjoy the program.
People paid quite a price, and we should never forget that. Even if they were duped, even if they were conned, even if they were sold out and betrayed, which we know most of them were, what is war? War is a moneymaker for the controllers of this tawdry, godforsaken planet, which used to have such potential. So let's just remember for a few moments that. I also want to remember David Dees. David Dees left us, moved on, and I think he's in a much better place. A year ago today, on this 31st of May, and I was with him until just a few hours before he left. And it was a very, very sad situation, but no one deserves to suffer that much, and I was glad that his suffering ended, and he is gone. I put up a little tribute on the homepage at the top for David, who was without question and remains the world's greatest political artist, without any question. You can see some of his art under his name on the left-hand column. It's all over the internet. He did 600 or 700 pieces. I did work with David on most of them, and have been able to update some of them that are nearly 10 years old now, and make them just as sparkling and relevant. I hope you saw one the other day, the fly swatter. That was David, all David. I just did a little updating, and it had all the magic it ever did. So we're going to keep doing that. So on this Memorial Day, we have truly much to be thankful for as well. Even though things look dark, we still have the ability to stand up and make it known that we are not going to go quietly into that very dark night they have planned for us. And you know who they are. All right. First up tonight, the remarkable mind of Donald Jeffries, who is one of the most lightning-quick observers and analysts of the political, social spectrum that I've ever had the pleasure of having on this program. Hello, Donald. Welcome back. Audio's good here. I'm pushed up. Actually, it is reading a little low. Are you able to hear me and everything I've said?
Yeah.
Okay. I am not getting the range I usually do on this. Everyone just hang on a sec. Donald, come on here. I want you just to talk a little bit. I'm going to disconnect and reconnect and see if I can get this better. Welcome back, Donald.
Okay. Thanks for having me, Jeff. And, you know, we don't want to say happy Memorial Day, but
no.
I wrote a piece today on it. And I've done this before on a Memorial Day where I just write an anti-war screed pretty much every Memorial Day because, as you noted, these soldiers were duped. And this is not to deny the individual heroism, acts of heroism, that happened on every battlefield. But I think the perspective, I wish more parents would have the perspective that Cindy Sheehan has or Pat Tillman's family did, you know, high-profile victims, that this is – you can't – too many parents are assuaged by getting a flag-draped coffin and a nice – a few speeches from powerful politicians telling them how heroic their loved one was. And it's, you know, I prefer to heed the words of Smedley Butler, who talked about war being a racket and that wars are never about enemies. They're about opportunities for profit. And in my view, the last war that Americans should have been proud to fight in would have been the War of 1812. Because we were undeniably attacked then. I mean, we had no choice. I mean, I'm not a pacifist where if someone comes into my home, I'm going to defend my home. I'm not going to let them take it. But I don't see any point, and we shouldn't see any point in sending our best and brightest, and that's our youth are the best and brightest, to far-flung lands all over the world, as we've been doing for my entire lifetime and much longer than that. To die senselessly and needlessly, and then we try to dress it up and put a cherry on top by saying, you know, they died for your freedom so that you could live. Well, look at the state of our country today. So, you know, they may have thought they were dying for our freedom. They may have had good intentions and patriotically misguided, however you want to put it. But they clearly didn't die to preserve our freedom because our freedoms have been eroded tremendously, especially since the war on terror began in 2001.
It eroded, but they've been taken from us. They have been really stolen from us, ripped from our hands, ripped from our souls, our political souls, and our spiritual souls as well. Our basic God-given rights have been taken from us, stolen as a thief in the night, but in broad daylight. They're not playing games. Go ahead.
Right. So, you know, this idea that they're, even if you assume that they have a military purpose, and there isn't, and that's the thing too. And I talked about this in Crimes and Cover-Ups, my book, is the last war that we fought where you could, again, and I think, you know, all these wars are, you know, about hobgoblins, and I think we have no business going into either world wars. But World War II was the last war.
Absolutely none.
No, but at least in World War II, there wasn't this containment and these demarcation zones and everything that came after that. At least, you knew who the enemy's alleged enemies were supposed to be. You knew who you were fighting. They had came up with a reason that's, you know, always contrived and dressed up, but there was a rationale. But starting with the Korean War, once the Cold War, the fake and phony Cold War started, you see what happened when you had a genuine military man like Douglas MacArthur that actually tried to win that war, because that's what you're supposed to do, isn't it? If you're in a war, you're supposed to win it.
Somebody said that once. Yeah.
Yeah. Doesn't make. I mean, it's like playing. You know, if you're playing a competitive sporting game, you know, game, and you don't try to win, it makes no sense. But it's certainly in war, you're obviously supposed to win. And MacArthur tried to do that, and he was obviously fired famously by Harry Truman, who was the king of this new type of politician, this supposed anti-communist who did everything he could to stop people like him or later Senator Joe McCarthy. People that actually wanted to fight communism were smeared and demonized, and they continued these no-win, senseless wars, starting with Korea, and then obviously really went overboard in Vietnam, and ever since then, obviously starting with the alleged Gulf War and all these Operation Freedom, all these nonsensical names they gave to all the various misdeeds and excursions into the Middle East, none of them make any sense. There's no fight over territory. we're not really trying to stop anybody there. We're just trying to inflict our idea of freedom on people. And we're putting our troops actually in harm's way. And I feel sorry for them. I don't think they should be lauded. I think they should be sympathized with and brought home because they're put in no-win situations. They're out there where, because of what we're doing, what their government is doing, and what they represent, they become right. despised and with good reason. Yep. You know, we would despise any military forces occupying us. So it's senseless. And again, I didn't even go into my article, but certainly when you see the kind of atrocities that I talked about in Crimes and Cover-Ups, but back to the Greatest Generation, the kind of stuff they did in World War II, where they literally raped so many women, Japan had to open a brothel to deal with them. I mean, this is unfortunately true. And, the same thing happened in Germany. And so this is hardly something that we should be celebrating. But again, it gets dressed up in patriotism. And I talk in the article about how the meaning of patriotism has changed, where today and 4th of July even, but certainly today and Memorial Day, we're honoring the war dead. Nobody talks. We're not honoring the almost 7,000, and that seems like a very small number, but that's, you know, how fewer deaths there were in those days in the Revolutionary War. We're not talking about those people that died for our independence, really died for a cause. Nobody thinks of them because they're all just dead white racists. We basically go back to we're thinking of basically from Lincoln on, where the definition of patriotism changed from independence to kind of a subservience to government. So when you're fighting for your country, you're really fighting for your government. And that was obviously exemplified when they created this hideous Uncle Sam figure, right. You know, to coincide with World War. I mean, the founders would have been appalled. But, yeah,
really disgusting. And by the way, we always want to, if we can, and I mean this to black, white, all races. Please remember when you think about slavery and who the guilty parties were, think about the people who made it possible and who brought all of those people over here from Africa. Think about their business ethics, who they were and who owned the slave ships, who owned the slave trade. You got to remember that. It's a part of history. And right, you look it up. I think most of you already know. This wasn't a white Christian endeavor. This was a Jewish business, massive operation. And they made a fortune on it. So keep that in mind. Go ahead.
Well, we should always look. And again, that's why I brought up the Smedley Butler, who I think is, again, he's woefully unrecognized. I think he's the greatest anti-war activist of all time, but his quotes are timeless, and I have a few of them in our article today. But, this is...
That article is under Donald's name, by the way, and guests, please. It says Memorial Day, one of the last few for many. And it says under that, the racket thanks you for your service. It's right there. That's the essay he's talking about.
And I call it the racket because Smedley Butler's famous pamphlet, who was really not much bigger than Common Sense, Thomas Paine's pamphlet, but it was just as important. Unfortunately, Americans heeded, or way more Americans were impressed by Common Sense in the Revolutionary period than Americans in the World War I era should have been, impressed with the war as a racket. But, unfortunately, it wasn't published till 1935, but Smedley Butler died before its time in 1940, before World War II came, but his pamphlet did not prevent our involvement in World War II, as I'm sure he hoped. But he talked about being in service for 33 years and how much money he made for these big cartels and the big banks. And this is not Don Jeffries that, never served in the military and had no desire to. I have no experience in the military at all. So I'm definitely an outsider when I'm criticizing it. Smedley Butler was a general who served over 33 years. And as he said, he helped make South America safe for these huge corporations and stuff. He saw things from the inside, and he didn't like what he saw, and he was converted. And I tell this story in, Huey Long's family didn't even know the connection I have there, but Smedley Butler and Huey Long, my hero, were great friends. And Huey Long, before they assassinated him, when he was right after he announced he was going to run for president in 1935, he had the audacity, and Huey never lacked for confidence, to write a book called My First Days in the White House. Now, in the book, he had
good for him. I didn't know that. That's nice.
Yeah. And
what a class act.
Well, like he wrote, he came up with a fictitious cabinet. And of course, in it, he took another personal swipe at FDR, but he busted FDR back down to his assistant secretary of the Navy or something, which what he was before World War One. So I'm sure FDR loved that. But his secretary of war, because they didn't have a secretary of defense yet, they called it secretary of war. Huey Long's secretary of war was General Smedley Butler, the greatest anti-war activist of all time. So you know how many wars would have happened under Huey Long's presidency.
Right.
So, and General Smedley Butler reacted to that by calling it the greatest honor of his life. And when Huey Long was assassinated, General Smedley Butler withdrew from the public and he said, I have no more desire to be involved. I mean, he was crushed. I think he knew what it represented. So those, you know, two of the last great American statements that we had, and both of them were voices for peace. And, you know, there weren't very many after them. And I, you know, when you look at the anti-war movements in American history, you know, the one we know of very well was the Vietnam anti-war movement, which was huge and filled with, you know, with government assets, as I pointed out in my book, Hidden History. But it's really the only time where we have had these incredible marches and movements to stop a war. It didn't happen. World War One, you had more protests, but Woodrow Wilson threw people like Eugene Debs and other leftists mostly in prison. And that's where we got the asterisk on the First Amendment, because the Supreme Court upheld Wilson's right to do that and said you can't yell fire in a crowded theater. That's where that came from. And of course, you know, however you look at it, Debs and the anti-war protesters were not yelling fire in a crowded theater. But, you know, Americans are historically illiterate. They don't know where that comes from. And, but that was, that really crushed dissent. And then when you had the America First movement, which was to keep America out because they didn't want millions more to die in another European war. And this was left driven. People like John T. Flynn were liberal journalists of the era. They're the ones who led the America First Movement. It wasn't Nazis or right-wingers or anything like that. It was the leftists, the good liberals of their era who were against
war. Well,
the
John Kennedy sort of liberals that
yes, exactly. And you know, Joseph P. Kennedy, his dad, I mean, he was part of the America First Movement. That's where the Kennedys first got in hot water with the establishment, because the old man had all the right enemies. Churchill despised him. Roosevelt despised him. Harry Truman despised him. The bankers despised him. And he was also an early critic of the Federal Reserve. And Kennedy was friends with Huey Long. So these people, these are the good people you can see, like who ended up succeeding and who ended up getting killed or whatever. It's pretty obvious. But, once the America First Movement, and that's why it was demonized when Trump chose that. And again, that's another one of the many things that gave me hope. Against hope with Trump, that he used that specific term, America First, because that was an anti-war slogan to keep us out of another war. And but once they fooled the Americans, as they have over and over again, the Americans never questioned these false flags, and they fell for the Pearl Harbor false flag, and that was the American.
Yeah, Don, why is it that Americans truly are beyond gullible when it comes to this stuff? We like to think of ourselves as an enlightened, well-educated, pragmatic society. At least we used to be. Now God knows what we are. But you'd think that people, and I know Charles Lindbergh, and he used to speak to sell out, what, they had 50,000 people. So the Americans were smart enough to see the con that was underway. We were being pushed into World War II in the Pacific and in Europe, and nobody wanted anything to do with it. Nobody to speak of. And that's the truth.
And they came up with and of course, again, this was the left that were the left of its era. I mean, not to the left, because you had a classic left, but the globalists, you know, Woodrow Wilson would be like the first American true globalist when he pushed us into the World War, but certainly Roosevelt was.
Right.
And all the people around, and the Baruchs and Harrimans, all these people that were advising Roosevelt, that Huey Long criticized. He says, he's got them all around, you know, so why not call it out for what it is? They're all there. All the bankers are there. And that's why he started to just trust him. But they devised a way, and they played on the prejudices of the day, just like Richard Hauptman was railroaded over the Lindbergh baby kidnapping, which he had nothing to do with. He was an innocent pawn because they demonized him by calling him Bruno.
That's right.
And it was anti-German sentiment. And they did the same thing here, where it was the dirty, sneaky, rotten Japs. you know, now that would be considered so politically incorrect, but they used it. And Americans at the time, that got to people. Wow, these are Asians. These are, you know, dirty, sneaky, rotten Japs. And they came and bombed Pearl Harbor. You know, we're all in this together now. And it worked like a charm. I mean, literally, there was almost no opposition to World War II. It was astonishing what that particular false flag, the wonders it worked. It worked like no other in history.
Because how much opposition was it before the Vietnam War?
Yeah, well, before the Vietnam, right, yeah.
None.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, right, no. The Vietnam War, for whatever reason,
we had Americans standing up and being Americans. Thank God for that. We were vindicated, at least to a degree.
Yeah, we did.
We stopped it.
I'm for, you know, any anti-war marches, because, you know, we there's no reason for us to be doing, and I use a quote from Smedley Butler in The Way to Eliminate War, and one of them was to say to fight only wars to defend the country. Now, we haven't done that. Even if you argue that the Japanese really did attack us, it was a sneak attack, okay, you could claim they attacked, but they didn't attack the continental United States, Hawaii isn't in the, but I think there's a lot of reasons to question that. I go back to War of 1812. Yeah, if your continent is, you know, if they're burning the White House down, obviously you have to fight to do that. You'd be crazy to, or you'd be siding with the enemy. So nobody argues against that. But since that time, every other war has been over, you know, other things, usually these endless hot series of hobgoblins that H.L. Mencken talked about, demonizing foreign leaders from the
Kaiser. Good term. Very good.
Yeah, another honest liberal, H.L. Mencken, back when they had them. You know, whether it's the Kaiser, the dirty, sneaky, rotten Japs, Hitler, the biggest, you know, demon of all time, Mussolini.
I'm waiting.
What are you waiting for?
I'm waiting for the name Stalin and
Lenin.
Oh, yeah,
exactly. Well, Stalin, yeah, but you know, Stalin was on our side. He was Uncle Joe. So we didn't, and
the point. Americans, again, were conned. Those nice Russians. No.
Yeah.
Psychopathic, superhuman exterminators of human life. That's what they were. They made Hitler look like a Girl Scout. Back in a minute with Donald Jeffries. Hold on. Okay, and welcome back. Talking with Donald Jeffries, as we do each Monday. It is Memorial Day, the 31st of May. Tomorrow is June 1st. Half the year is gone already. Former FDA chief says, gosh, laboratory leaks of viruses happen all the time during the probe into the COVID origins. And then they're calling him, this is cute, Fauci, a little fraud, they're calling him an infectionist now. I like that. Infectionist fraud Fauci says it's too early to declare victory over COVID-19. Well, Tony, it'll always be too early to declare victory over that one. It's called a bioweapon. It'll run loose as long as they want it to. We have a story today, and I don't remember now if it's Scotland or Ireland. I believe Scotland. But we'll have the details for you soon. There is a contract put out by the government seeking a number of very large industrial-sized warehouses. Why? For stacking body bags. You saw the video, I think, 2-3 months ago, the FedEx warehouse, box after box after box, full. I think it was 1,000, maybe 1,000 body bags per box, 500 at least, stacked up, waiting to be shipped out to all over the country. Look, they're planning this. That spike protein is going to destroy the immune system in people. It's not the virus. Forget the virus. It's the spike protein. It will destroy your immune system by ordering it to make one antibody and one antibody only, simply by virtue of the avalanche of spike proteins that your cells are genetically going to be forced to manufacture and turn loose in your own body. Your immune system will be so focused on the spike protein that it will not have time to take care of you with a broad-based, non-exclusive approach that all immune systems exert. We will be without an immune system. It's like super AIDS. There'll be nothing there. And if you don't think disease after disease after disease will walk in your open front door and take you out, you better think again. All right? Go ahead, Don. Didn't mean to get off on a rant there.
No. We we have so many lovely things to look forward to. But I just wanted to finish up. So, you know, I was reading a lot about Harry Patch, who was the last surviving World War One soldier who died at age 111 in 2009. Yeah. And he was a very strong anti-war activist. And again, this is a guy who was the last one that was in those trenches. It was awful. You see the movie 1917, which is actually done very realistically. It shows what it was like there in those trenches. But, you know, he one of his many great comments was he said, "War is organized murder and nothing else." And I wish Americans would, but Americans just aren't receptive to that. And I don't know why. I think they like the pomp, and they like the, you know, I think it was Samuel Boswell, the old, or Samuel Johnson, you know, said that, you know, wars, the patriotism is the last refuge of a scoundrel. And Ambrose Bierce, one of my all-time favorites in the Devil's Dictionary, said, "With all due respect to Dr. Boswell, I say that patriotism is the first refuge of a scoundrel." And I think that Bierce was exactly right. And I think it plays upon, and I think it's the same reason you see politicians still talk about the American people this collectively, and they're so great, and they're always, mm-hmm. they're always buttering us up and talking us how great we are. The American people's always sacrificed, and and then they act as a sacrifice again. But, people fall for it, and I guess, I mean,
Don, one quick little injection here. They're falling for things harder and faster and more absolutely than ever before. The last year and a half now of being beaten into pulp with fear and lies and all this crap about the virus, when it was never the virus. It was always the vax. The people now don't know what the hell to do. They don't know who to believe. They really don't, especially if they're not listening to this program and a few others. They're looking at TV, commercial TV, owned by six corporations, and all in lockstep with each other. Every one of them. Mass mind control. They don't call it programming for nothing, and that's what's happening.
and the exact same mindset that killed the America First Committee as soon as the Pearl Harbor was launched. They didn't have any mechanism, obviously no internet, no real alternative media back then to question it. And ask questions about, you know, why a headline appeared in a Hawaiian newspaper, you know, Japs to attack over weekend and things like that. And I wrote all about this in Crimes and Cover-Ups. But and what happens is when someone tries to question it in the establishment, that's why more people don't. There was a court historian, and you know, that's what I refer to establishment historians in good standing, a Pulitzer Prize winner, John Toland, who wrote an acclaimed biography in Adolf Hitler, among other things. And in 1982, he decided to write a book about Pearl Harbor, and he called it Infamy. He did lots of great research, and he showed conclusively that Roosevelt engineered it. Might as well have been flying one of the planes with the Japanese in there. That's how obvious it was. And for his troubles, he was called a Nazi, which it really makes no sense because his book had nothing. It was nothing about the Nazis. It was about the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor.
Can you tell me what a Nazi is?
Really? What's
you know what it is? I'll tell you what it is. It was a word concocted by GCHQ in the UK, maybe MI6 or both of them. It's a derogatory word in German that deals with low-life, useless people. It's a scum term, and the British concocted it. And we still use it. We shouldn't.
Sure.
We're going to call them something. Call them National Socialists. That's what they were.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's become a term to apply to anybody you don't agree with. You're a Nazi. You know, it's like, what? And
it's true. And there's those people are so shallow. Oh, man, when I hear that, I just cringe.
No, it's terrible. But somebody like Toland, the lesson there is clear is that this guy gave up a Pulitzer Prize winning distinguished career by writing a book that I'm sure he was naive. He wasn't a conspiracy theorist. He had no idea that he would be drummed out of the academic community. He was, and he was called names, and he ended up ended his life very sadly. The only people that would have him were the historical revisionists, who are, of course, obviously demonized as anti-Semitic. That's where only place he could speak in the last few years of his life.
He was a conspiracy researcher, all right? And we've got to get rid of this term. That was one of the most clever word games ever. Conspiracy theorist. No, conspiracy researcher. Academic researcher.
Absolutely. And we have to take the term back, too, because, I've said many times, and people tell me, and I understand why they say that to me. Well, you think everything is a conspiracy. Well, yes, I do. And the reason
everything is a goddamn conspiracy.
Yeah,
that's the truth. An agreement by two people to do something is a conspiracy. Right. Look it up.
Exactly. When you're being run by the people running your country and running the world are conspirators by any definition of the word. This is what they do. They conspire. That's a way of doing business. They don't know any other way. So this is what they do. So of course they conspire. They cover up. And when you look at any of these historical incidents, no matter what, and my books are full of them, you see the same patterns, the same kind of demonization. The people that are, opposed to whatever the narrative is selling demonized as appeasers or, other pejorative names. And, you have the unnatural deaths. People just happen to die very strangely around these things. It's not just the JFK assassination, the body counts and so forth. The missing evidence, the evidence that's lost or they can't find it or, we destroyed that, it's all over the place. So people can't help but be suspicious of these things if you're thinking, but most people are not capable of independent thought. And we're seeing it now with what I call, what's been happening in the last over a year, the greatest PSYOP in the history of the world. We talked about all the false flags and the PSYOPs. They were all paving the way for this one because this is the first worldwide PSYOP. This was not just an American production. This is everywhere. Everybody bought it. Not a single troop was needed. Not a single police officer was needed. Within a matter of weeks, a week or two at the most, the entire world was locked down. And it's still locked down. And you have people whose natural inclination should be not to wear a mask that are still clinging to these masks, even when they've got this vaccination they don't need. And you try to talk to them, and I keep talking to my people I know and my family and friends, you cannot reason with them. If you're not vaccinated, they're still scared of you. And of course, we all try to say, well,
I know.
To protect yourself.
And here's the truth of it is, if you are vaccinated, the unvaxxed should be frightened of them because we know about the shedding and the transmission of the spike protein, which destroys the immune system. We know that now. So you unvaxxed out there really better wear that mask. And I'm not saying that mask is able to stop proteins very easily. Proteins are 10 times smaller than a virus. And you think a virus can sometimes get through a mask. What I do, and I wear a mask now, people without masks, they give me cause for concern. I'll take toilet paper and double or triple it and put it on the inside of the mask. Now what that does, when you breathe into it, it becomes moist, the toilet paper. And I think it's going to be able to trap more little tiny things against the moist barrier that toilet paper creates. Just a thought, but you might want to try it.
Well, the whole concept of the vaccination, and this extended even before a few years back. You've heard they were trying to, obviously the anti-vaxxers, they've been trying to demonize people like that for years. That are concerned about the number of vaccinations, but even things like the mumps vaccine and the measles vaccine, when some parents weren't having their kids get it, other parents freaked out. And people at the time, I remember saying, well, if your kid is vaccinated, he's protected, right? So obviously they don't believe these vaccines protect any, because the same thing now, if you've been vaccinated, that's supposed to protect you. Aren't you bragging about, I have my second shot? But no, they still are wearing masks. And they still want you to be vaccinated. And that gives the game away. This is not about protecting anyone. This is about getting everyone to get the jab. And eventually they may make it an apartheid system where they'll...
excuse me. I didn't mean to cut you off. Look at the bribery. At least three states now
yes,
have put together million-dollar lotteries to con people to take the damn shot.
Yeah.
I mean, this is literal. I've never seen anything like it. And if nothing else, Don, the lengths to which these alleged governmental agencies are going to try to get people to take these shots ought to tell them that that's the last thing in the world they want to take.
Yeah, don't go on the ship. You know, that's the old Twilight Zone episode. I mean, if they're selling something, I don't want it because you're probably tired of hearing me say this, but having worked in the medical industrial complex, these people don't care about you. Within the medical industrial complex, they don't. And your politicians, certainly, even if you think they do, you can't believe that politicians care about your welfare. I mean, everything that's happened in your lifetime tells you otherwise. They don't care about you. They care about themselves. They care about lining
correct.
Their pockets.
Totally correct.
Serving their masters. And so the idea that they're selling is that shows how important it is for everyone to get this jab. If they're, I guess, you know, French, Bill de Blasio eating French fries on screen, take the vaccine. It was like a comedy skit. That didn't work. The donuts didn't work. So, okay, let's have a lottery. And, again, they know Americans. Americans love to think they're going to be that 1 in 10 trillion or whatever
to win
the lottery. So, you know,
they'll be able to afford a very good funeral is what they'll do if they win. Yeah.
Get
that shot. Check out here. The Deagle.com projections look more and more real every day. They do. The Western white Christian nations were all targeted first wave. Of course, after they're knocked down, then they will go after the rest, the second and third world and other first world countries like Russia, like China. You wait. This is the first wave. If they can knock the white Western Christian nations down, they can do anything. Okay?
Yeah.
And they're well on the way to doing it. 50% of Americans are now with one shot at least. 40% of Americans have fully vaxxed status now.
Yeah.
Two shots. And that's before they start forcing the booster on people to pick up anybody they missed.
Yeah. And they're because this has worked so well for them, they have, you know, as Jim Garrison said years ago about the JFK assassination, you know, they have no reason to change their tactic. It's worked very well for them. And that can be, you know, construed in a much broader sense. The people that rule us have no reason to change anything they're doing, lying, false flags, psyops, absurd narratives sold to the public that
works,
a child.
Don't fix it.
Right. Yeah. And they know. They're more aware than any of us are about how stupid most people are. And I'm assuming that it works pretty much around the world, but I can only speak for Americans about how dumb they are. But Americans
the same.
Have been dumb.
They're all screen addicts. I don't care what country they're in. They're screen addicts. They're the same. Yeah. Same basic profile.
Yeah. And these are, you know, people that, it's so sad to see because you can't, especially when you're talking to somebody who's running around, he's been vaccinated, and he still has a mask on, he still doesn't want you getting too close to him. You can't possibly reason with somebody like that. You have to walk away. It's impossible. And that's the mentality we're confronting. And it's so disillusioning because you're looking at this and you're realizing if we're ever going to throw off this tyranny that completely engulfs our country, these are the people that we're going to have to reach. And look at how they're falling for this. They're not questioning anything.
How are we going to reach them, Don? That's the problem. We don't have access to the mainstream media. It's owned by six corporations, maybe five. They will not let us anywhere near that. We got no platform. All we can do is pick up people on the internet, and you and I and a few others are going to be shouted down and disparaged as being conspiracy lunatics. That's fine. Yep. That's what they do. But the people with brains and intuition, who are still connected to that inner voice, they're going to hear it. They're going to hear at least something that will get their curiosity going, and they'll do some research. All the data is there. You just have to look for it. It's all at rents.com, all of it. It's all there.
Yeah. Well, it's and that's why I resent the term conspiracy theory so much. I've told anybody who's called me that, it's like, you know, I don't have any theory. What theory do I have? And is it like, for instance, in this pandemic, is it a theory?
That's right.
To say
that's
the CDC. I mean, I use the CDC as my source whenever I can because they're telling you what's going on. they're the ones that sent the directive out to the hospitals over a year ago that said you are to list the cause of death as being from COVID, even where, and I quote, a test was unavailable or inconclusive. So they're telling you that. Or early on, every weekly CDC update tells you, no, asterisk, presumed cases are included in the totals. Presumed. So that means they were untested. They don't know. And then last fall, they really gave the game away when they just kind of cavalierly announced, well, you know, 94% of these deaths that we're attributing to COVID were actually from other causes. That's the CDC. That's not a conspiracy theorist saying it. It's not a conspiracy theory.
How much ink did that get? Very little.
No. Yeah, and I, you know, I try to use that talking point on people, and they just give you, it doesn't matter. It's not as powerful.
It's not a daze.
Yeah. It's just, you know, do you understand what that means? This is the leader of the show. This is the CDC. They're the ones that are orchestrating this. They're telling you this. Not to mention, you should have been skeptical in the beginning, as myself and a lot of people tried to point out, because the CDC and the WHO both were caught lying about the swine flu in 2009. That's how Cheryl Atkinson, one of the last good journalists we had in the mainstream media, lost her job at CBS by reporting that. She was fired because we don't allow investigative journalism in this country in our state-controlled media.
Nope.
So if they've done it before, you know, so you think that, well, they did it then, but they're not lying now on something this grand a scale. So it is very disillusioning.
Don, do you know Cheryl?
Yeah, yes. Well, you know, she's been on my show before, and she'll answer my email usually.
Yeah. Well, if you get a chance, invite her. I'd love to have her on this program. She knows what we do here, and I think she'd do.
Okay, I mentioned. Yeah, I think. Yeah, she's really. There are not very many of them out there like that, and she's.
No.
I give her kudos because she's been skeptical about this from the beginning. And she knows that's not going to, you know, that's not going to open the doors back to CNN and CBS for her, that's for sure. But, my hat is off to any mainstream journalists. There aren't very many of them. You know, somebody like Glenn Greenwald, that's
very few.
That's why I write at Substack now, because Substack is a growing platform, and it's not censored at all, where they let people like me write and say what I want to say, and they don't censor, and it gets pretty good readership. And Glenn Greenwald is probably the biggest name there. And he's doing really, really great work, now.
Yeah.
And so that gives me hope that maybe there are enough of us out there. But otherwise, like you said, you got to kind of do what you can. That's why one of my favorite speeches and phrases is from Robert F. Kennedy, you know, when he was talking about sending forth tiny ripples of hope. I think that's all we can do is send forth tiny ripples of hope that eventually, you know, we hope if you get enough of them, then they could create a tidal wave to break down the walls of injustice and oppression. And that's, you know, what he talked about back in the 60s.
Right. And I think the Kennedys, to give them credit, which I don't think many do, I really think they really had a handle on the fact that the global elite were ruthless and would kill anybody who got in their way. They knew who the enemy was. They did.
Absolutely.
I believe this.
Absolutely. And that, you know, if people read my book, Hidden History, I have a whole section in there where I talk about how everyone in power despised the Kennedys. And I'm talking about the left. The left hated Kennedys, too, even though they're generally thought of as liberals. And that's why even to this day, why there's so much effort and they fear for Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who I love his work he's doing now, but he's got that unfortunate speech problem that he inherited from Rose Kennedy, so he can't really talk like a powerful politician, and I know that that probably holds him back from doing it. But if he ever tried to, and unfortunately he would have to watch his back, because I talk about all the Kennedys that you don't even know. I mean, they've killed so many Kennedys have died unnaturally. It's absolutely ridiculous. And if you look at the kind of people, and I talk, you know, people from Malcolm X and on, and William Kunstler, who was a big leftist attorney back in the day, said awful things about the Kennedys. Basically said, you know, the Kennedys deserved to be assassinated. And I've got the quotes in Hidden History. People don't know these things, and there's a reason why. For instance, when Bobby Kennedy ran for president in 1968, Eugene McCarthy was the darling of the left. Well, I exposed in Hidden History how McCarthy's entire campaign was filled with ex-CIA officers.
Disgusting.
Yeah, and that was the fake opposition they didn't want Bobby Kennedy in there. Not to mention McCarthy was classless when Bobby was killed. He made some kind of really disparaging remark. And that's, you know, it's the Kennedys were different. And I don't really know how they seeped through, I guess because they had independent wealth and they were able to get through. And maybe the system, you know, thought that they could control JFK, but obviously they couldn't. And they're not going to make that mistake again. That's the last time they let that happen. And it's they're very careful now with people. That's why, you know, I was dubious about Trump from the beginning because I've, you know, since JFK was assassinated, I think it's pretty obvious that every president has been selected, not elected. And so.
No question. None. That was the end of it right there. That was the end. It was Trump's, the end of the last independent voice in government, truly.
Absolutely. And that's
American independent voice.
And if people out there, if you're interested on Memorial Day, give yourself a break from the flag waving and the fake cheerleading for war and read the text of John F. Kennedy's American University speech in June 1963, which I think is probably the greatest speech ever made by an American president, where he talked about, you know, peace, where he's the first president ever to look at his enemies in human terms and said they're, you know, they care for their children and so forth. Just and you'll get a real sense of the man and why they killed him. He was really the only voice for peace maybe we've ever had in the White House.
You know, he said it all, and we've spent a lot of time on this program with Harry Cooper talking about the U-boat service in Germany and the war. These weren't evil Nazis. They were men, young boys, 18, 19, who had their lives in front of them. Same as our young boys. Exactly. Some were married with kids. Same. They were good people. Nothing wrong with them at all. Nothing. So, point well taken. If you get a link to that speech, send it over. I'll be glad to post it.
Okay, we'll do.
Don, thank you. Salute. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Take care.
All right.
Donald Jeffries, one of the best. All right, we'll be right back. Hang on.